Okay, are we on?
Yes, we are.
We are on. All right. We have here Shalini Tandon, who is from India, who does the art of batik. She's been demonstrating over in the folk arts crafts area, and she will be demonstrating there till 5. And we're going to talk about batik, how she learned, what it is. And you're from the Orlando area now, mm-hmm. right?
I've lived in Orlando for the last 20 years.
For 12 years.
20.
Can you tell us how you got started with batik? Well, first, tell us what it is.
Batik is a wax resist process. We cover the areas that we don't want colored with wax and then paint or dip it in the dyes and then re-wax the areas we want to save and just keep on going with the same thing. There we go, you can see it. Same painting keeps coming back.
Can you talk about that?
This is the batik. It's done with the wax resist process. The correct way is, if it's a white piece of fabric, you cover the areas that you want to save white, dip it in the yellow, you go light to dark, then you dry it, you cover white and yellow, and then dip it in the third color. And just keep on going with as many times as you want to do it. Takes a long time to finish one piece.
How many times might you do it?
It depends how many colors you want to use. You can use anywhere from 3 color to 30 colors. It's how many you want. But I have developed my own technique. So what I do is I cover it with, I draw my design in hot wax at one time, the complete design. And then start feeding the colors in almost like watercolors and keep developing it by re-waxing the areas and adding more to it. So it takes a little less time, but it's still long.
How about the designs? What sort of designs do you do? And are there traditional designs?
Not anymore, unless somebody really wants. If I'm commissioned to do a traditional design, I do, or once in a while, but usually I incorporate them either with some contemporary artwork or do all the way contemporary means realism mixed with contemporary. I do a lot of landscapes, and mostly I do landscapes, really.
Are these landscapes of India or Florida? Or?
I think you can go either way.
Either way.
Yeah. Okay. Yesterday, the piece I did from Stephen Foster. Uh-huh. I just did the trees right here.
So you've adapted this traditional art form to your current environment then?
Mm-hmm. It's much easier. I don't have to use my brains and think what to do. I just see what is in front of me and draw and paint. So it's much easier.
Now, how are you trained in this art?
Well, since I've been a kid, my hobby was to paint. I started with watercolors and oils and then went to school for it. So I graduated with fine arts. That's where I learned batik.
And where was this? What part of India?
That was in India,
where?
In Lucknow, in Kanpur, at north part of India.
The north part of India.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the people that we've had here doing the...
Rangoli.
Rangoli, they're from the south, huh?
They are from south, yeah. They are from Mangalore.
And they do the Bharatanatyam
mm-hmm.
dance.
It's very South Indian, Bharatanatyam classical dance.
What is the difference? What are some of the cultural differences between the north and south of India?
In India, every state has a different language, spoken and written different. We have their traditional cultures are like, the way of dressing is a little different, their food is different. It's almost like a separate country.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, we have 15 languages, written and spoken different. We have dialects are different.
How about the religion? Is religion uniform or different?
Every religion in the world you can find in India. There isn't any religion that's not there. But majority is Hindu religion. We have a lot of Muslim population.
Both in the north and south is majority
Hindu? Oh, yeah, all
Hindu.
Over. Mm-hmm. Yeah, south you'll find a lot more Christianity in lower south part of it because there's a lot of converted Christians also. But any other religion you can think of is in the country.
What are some of the things that you had, how did your course of study go in India? How were you taught?
Very difficult.
Well, can you tell us that?
When I went to school, it was 10 years of high school, then 2 years of intermediate they used to call. And then again 2 years of graduation. So it was basically 4 years of college. But now it has changed. Now they've gone to 12 years of high school and still 4 years of college. So now they've added 2 more years. And those 4 years is graduation and then you go to master's, same as here. And we study a lot more subjects than what we have here. Even from first and second grade, most kids have 8 subjects to read. And we have school starts like 7:30, 8 o'clock till 4, 4:30 in the afternoon. 1 hour recess, it's a full day school. Kids work a lot harder than we do here. Yeah. That's true, they
how
study
about,
a lot
How about
harder.
The art in particular? How did that study go? What are some of the things that you had to learn and study?
I have to learn, we have theory part. One part is the theory, so we have to learn the art history, mostly Indian art history, which is really old and deep, so you have enough to read and study in it. And then second part is the practical part, which is we have different schools of arts. Like in Bengal, we have a Shantiniketan, which was mostly by Rabindranath Tagore, if you've heard. And that art style is absolutely different. You can tell by looking at it. Then the Gujarat part, they have a art college. So every state has different. And we had to study the different kinds of art.
Okay. How about the mehendi? You want to talk a little bit about
sure.
that and explain what it is?
Yeah, mehendi is also from India. It's henna. It's a bush. They pick the leaves and grind those leaves and make a paste of it. And then they put it on hands, and it's mostly used for a lot of religious and auspicious occasions, also like weddings and all that. It's more of a decoration thing. It also has a medicinal value, but mostly they use for decoration pieces, and it's like a temporary tattoo. It washes out in a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And do, so they do the hands and the feet, huh?
Oh, yeah. They do the hands and the feet.
Are the designs, are they, you know, traditional?
The designs are very traditional. They, you will always see the religious symbols in it, or a lot of paisley work and all that. And it's very detailed and very fine work done on the hands and all. They're professionals who just come and do these things. It's a lot of fun. I mean, here it's getting very popular. You should go on internet, look for mehendi.
Yeah.
There's pages and pages of mehendi.
Is that right?
Yeah, and they have pictures of their hands and feet and all kinds of stuff. They're beautiful. But they're using like tattoo here. It's become real popular. They call it temporary tattoo. Yeah, it's. I would rather have that than the painful tattoo. At least this is painless. That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you don't regret it 10 years
later. Not at all. You can wash it out gradually. It keeps
okay, how about, what are some of the current influences on your batik? I mean, what happened, say, did all that stuff in the 60s have an effect on you, all the tie-dye and all that?
Oh, yeah. I think the color scheme changes. As the colors get more popular, mm-hmm. those color scheme changes, and also when the very abstract art came in, everybody started doing more abstract side of mm-hmm. it. Then again, back to the realism and all that. That's why I just mix it, so I don't go out of style problem.
Uh-huh.
I'm too lazy to change. That's another way of saying it. So I just keep doing, you know, mixing a little bit of both, and that helps. It just keeps on going.
And you still do traditional pieces, you say, if you're commissioned?
Oh, yes, I do traditional pieces. The pieces that I brought here are, other than this, this also can qualify for a village scene, if you really see it. And the other two pieces I brought are very, the theme is very Indian. You can go and see. One is a folk art, folk dance from South, and mm-hmm. the other one is just like buildings. Old Mughal buildings, like a fort. So that's again Indian theme. It's an Indian fort that I did.
Is there a particular material that's best to do the batik on?
You can use any fabric other than polyester, because polyester doesn't take dyes as well, and also it's easy to burn. But cotton and silk, I use mostly silk because I like the effect of it. Cotton mm-hmm. is very good to use also. But I use mostly silk. It kind of gets expensive.
Yeah.
So I don't sell as much, but I show a lot.
Uh-huh.
Which I would like to sell, but it doesn't happen. Not in Orlando.
Now, what do you make garments or just pictures or both?
Mostly pictures. I do little pieces like scarves and ties and all. And I've made a lot of cards. I do individual paintings for note cards.
For note cards.
Yeah, and they are almost like a painting. You cut?
Okay.
Time out?
No, yeah. I was just going to say I'm going to go get our next performer, and you can do it, speak as long or as little as you like.
Oh, we'll get them quick.
You can if you want.
Get them quick.
Okay. Do we have any questions from our large audience here?
Yeah, we have a large audience. Yeah. You want to...
Who were your favorite batik artists? Did you have any?
There aren't that many.
Yeah?
In India, there are. Yeah, and in India, there's a professor in Baroda College of Arts, which is in Gujarat. His name is Bihari Barbhaiya. He does beautiful traditional batiks. That's who I would like to do those same detailed work. But I don't think I have the patience like he does. It's beautiful. That's one person I've learned from. He's
Did you
a
learn
professor there.
Directly from him? You studied with him?
For a while, yeah. Almost like a visiting professor he was.
I see.
He's also come here. He's given us a workshop in Orlando. I've had him come here and given us a workshop.
Are you affiliated with the Asian Cultural Association there?
I used to work with them a lot, not anymore. Okay. I'm not with them. I mean, I'm there if they need me for volunteering or anything, but I just didn't have time enough, so I have gotten away from them a lot.
How large is the Indian community in the Orlando area?
Big. If you really see Indians and Pakistanis together, I'm sure there's over like 2,500 families there. There's a lot of Indian community. There was a time 20 years ago when we moved to Orlando, we knew each and everybody. Everybody knew each other. Now, every time you go to an Indian store or any Indian function, we don't know half the people. A lot of new people are coming in.
And then there's also sizable communities in Gainesville, the Tampa area, Jacksonville.
Well, I don't think there's any place where Indians are not. That large population, I think you'll find them on Moon also.
What brought you to the United States, and in particular Orlando?
I came with my parents. My father is a physician. He did his specialization in the 50s here. He went back to India, then brought us back here. So I came with them, and, you know, he was practicing. Now he's retired. So that's how I got here.
What brought him here? Economic opportunity?
No, he came to do his specialization in 1957. Then he went back in the 60s, didn't come back to 73 again. But I guess he wanted to come back and bring us, my sister and my brother, because he said they need to see the other part of the world. So he brought us back here, and now we're stuck here.
Do you go back to India?
Yeah.
Do you go back there for artistic inspiration?
No, I think I go back to visit my relatives and friends and everything and collect more stuff and bring back, basically, my supplies and all. I went 3 years ago.
What sort of supplies can you get there that you can't get here?
I get my silks there. I can get it here, but it's too expensive and not the same thing is available. So I get all my silks there. I used to get my dyes there, but they became a little too complicated. So, you know, to get from there and mix here and all that. So I finally started using the dyes. We have to buy them from California through catalogs. But I get my silks from there.
What sort of dyes are they? Is anything special?
Yeah, they are fabric dyes, and they are mixed with a lot of chemicals. We can either buy pre-mixed or we can mix ourselves.
Is it permanent or does it
bleed
or fade or...?
No, it is permanent. It's once it's set. We have to steam set it before we start using the fabric, and they are permanent.
So let's maybe real quick, we can run through the process of doing a batik piece. First, what's the first thing
you do? First thing is you take a piece of fabric. If it's an off-white or a white fabric and you want to save those colors, you cover the areas you want to save with wax. It's a mixture of paraffin and beeswax.
How do you apply the wax?
It's hot. So you can use brushes, or there is also a tool called tanging tool. We use that to draw with it. And then you color the areas. You go from light to dark. The next process is you cover the white and the next color that you used. Go to the third color, and then keep on doing the same thing over and over again. Okay. It's a lengthy process and a confusing process too.
And then when you get it done, you've got all your colors done, then what do you do?
Then we have to take the wax out.
How do you get it out?
We usually iron it between two pieces of paper. You keep ironing until the paper is absorbing the wax, and you keep ironing and changing the paper. Once that is done, the painting is ready. If you still need to get rid of almost 100% wax, then you dry clean it. Dry cleaning takes it out all the way.
And what did you say about steam setting?
The colors have to be steam set. Some dyes are available that are iron set. You can just heat press it. But the other ones are steam set. You have to steam the piece of fabric to set the colors.
After you're done. Mm-hmm. After you got the wax out.
Right.
How do you steam it?
It's rolled in paper and foil and then put in a steamer for like half an hour. And just that's it. Okay. You can do it in pressure cooker. You can do it in any kind of vegetable steamer.
How big of a piece can you work on at one time?
I think the largest piece I've done is probably about 45 inches to 36. 36 by 45.
Square?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That's a big piece to cover.
Uh-huh. What limits you on the size that you can work?
Really, nothing. It's just my design.
Your design and how much energy you have?
Yeah, well, that depletes gradually. But, it depends on the design. And like I had last year, I did some pieces of fabric for costuming for MGM Studios, and they wanted like 4 yards of material done. That is a lot harder to do than a 40-inch piece because you have to do it in step. You can only do stretch so much at a time and work on it.
So you work on it on a stretcher?
Mm-hmm.
Like
the fabric has to be stretched on a piece so the wax doesn't go through and stick to other things.
Okay.
But it's an interesting thing. People should come and see
it's
in the Folk
yeah,
Life
you're
area.
You're demonstrating over in the Folk Life Crafts area.
We should come and see that.
Before we wrap up, do we have any questions
Anybody?
From the audience about batik?
You got to come see it first, then you will have questions. Yeah,
okay.
You can come ask them.
Thanks a lot, Bob, for sharing it with us, Shalene.
Thanks, Bob. It was fun.
You bet. See you later.
Thank you.
Folks, if you'll stick with us for just a minute, we're going to have a flamenco guitar demonstration and discussion. Should be very exciting, so give us about 2 or 3 minutes. We'll be ready. Thank you.
know, it'd be nice someday. Four channels.
We got the channels. We don't have the. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's easy to get the other stuff. Matter of fact, you can probably
run down again. I inquired. We don't even have stands anymore. So we used to have stands up the Wazoo at the old bureau. But... Yeah, exactly. Anywhere you're comfortable.
Whatever you think.
Okay.
Además, tengo que sentar. ¿Puedo
take the guitar out?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Okay, we have three people and two microphones, but that's not going to slow us down. Who we have here is Paco Fanta.
Hello.
And Jorge Einbund. And this is we're doing an apprenticeship in flamenco guitar. And you're the master. Where are you from?
I'm from Spain. 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 Spain.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about just what flamenco guitar is, what the tradition is?
Well, the flamenco guitar came out when first with it came to sing, the flamenco singing, and then it was used more like in a bar. You know, it was like a very, not very important instrument at the time when it came out. And then, thanks to very good virtuosos that they developed a technique and some wonderful variations of music, became very interesting, very famous in the world. Right now it's like a, I would say, the music, flamenco music, it became a very, like a jazz, or like a bossa nova, other music popular that they are, even though it is a very folk music, very from a small towns in Andalusia, and from a very reduced group, and sometimes it was not really known, this music was not known to the public in general. But now, thanks to the guitar that, and very good master that have been, is very known, the flamenco all over the world.
Let's try something. How about if you get that microphone, and then we can trade off that microphone between you and Jorge.
Okay.
Yeah, bring it up plenty close, but even closer if you can. Slide it towards you, yeah. Okay, we'll have to reposition the mics when it comes time to play, but first we want to talk a little bit. So what sort of people is this anything like gypsy music?
Yeah, it's gypsy music, but it's I would say that the gypsies could give a lot of, how you say, apport, no? I would say, a lot of to the flamenco music. But it's not really the music like that it come from the gypsies, from Romania or other places, is different music, as you can see. So the music really is come from Andalusia. It's a mixture of culture. It's not only gypsy. The gypsy gave a lot, I would say, no more than anybody, I would say. And plus they travel a lot, so they like teach other people more than anybody else. I would say there is a mixture of Jewish music, Arab music, the Spanish music from there, and the gypsy, anybody that came there. They can, so much people came through Spain that it's really a mix of a lot of culture.
Now, how about the instrument itself? It looks, to somebody like myself who doesn't know much better, it looks a lot like what we Americans would call a classical guitar, because it's not a steel string guitar. But aren't there some differences?
Yeah, there is some difference. The difference in the flamenco guitar, it depends too on the constructor. Each constructor and constructor have different ways of doing the instrument. It's a handmade instrument. A wood instrument is handmade by only one person. And the flamenco guitar is done with the wood in the back and on the sides. It's done with, I think it's called, we say in Spanish, Cypress, I think it's
Cypress.
Cypress.
Yeah.
So it's Cypress. And in La Tapa, that is, how you say La Tapa?
The top.
Top. The top is made of different, two kind of wood. This particularly is made of spruce. It's like Canadian pine. Mm-hmm. And they do it too with a German pine that is darker. It's a very dark.
A German spruce. It's,
And it's very, very dark. And the difference between one and the other is that the German one die sooner, but sound faster. Faster, you get the sound faster. When it's new, a guitar, new guitar, always takes some time before it breaks in and begin to really sound good. Mm-hmm. And this, and this. The spruce from Canada take longer to break in, but one that is breaking, it take longer, doesn't die as soon as the other one.
Okay, you know what might be nice right now, if you could play a little, and then I think that's going to generate more interest and some questions, hopefully. And if you want to both play together, that's fine, but if either one, however you want to do it.
Okay. You want me to play something very traditional, very flamenco?
Sure.
And then we play some rumba together, no? Okay?
Okay. So.
Okay.
Okay. Experienced performer. Thank you. Great job. Let me get the mic. So what was the name of that piece?
That was Bulerías. That comes from Jerez. It's a piece that uses a lot of improvisation rhythmically. And it has different variations. So you play like one variation, you can make like a mix. Anything. It's not that you have like something that you play always the same. That's how it is, the Bulerías.
Okay. Now, how long have you been playing? How did you get started?
I have been playing around, I would say, like 20 years, something like that.
And you're located where now in Florida?
In Miami.
In Miami. How long have you been there?
Now it's 11 years. It's 11 going to be 12 years. This year.
So better than half of those 20 years you spent in Miami.
Yes, that's true.
Do you have a teacher there, somebody that you go to?
No.
So who did you learn from back home?
I learned from anybody. Everybody I saw, I just learned. I really don't have really a teacher that taught me.
Mm-hmm.
I have many teachers, I would say.
Okay. So you and Jorge want to do a piece together now? You say you were going to
okay,
do a rumba?
Okay, let's do a rumba.
Here's what?
Thank you. Yes. I feel about it.
And maybe you could switch over. We'll switch the microphones to both guitars, but maybe you could ask Jorge a couple of quick questions.
Okay.
So are you from Spain also, Jorge?
I'm from Argentina. I was born in Argentina.
Argentina. So how did you get interested in flamenco? And is there a flamenco tradition in Argentina?
In Argentina, there is not only a flamenco tradition, but there is a lot of different tradition because Argentina is also a country of immigrants. There is a very big immigration from every part of Europe to Argentina. And there is also a Spanish and Jewish immigration to Argentina, and they also bring their culture there. So that's basically where I got it.
Yeah, we've had Jaime Bronstein, a great klezmer clarinetist from Argentina that has played here many times. So how long had you been playing flamenco style before you hooked up with Paco here?
I've been playing, before I heard Paco, I was playing maybe 3 years, 3 to 4 years. I can't say I was really playing, but I was just picking it up.
Okay. So, all right, let's hear this piece you're going to play. It's rumba, huh?
Want to play the
percussion? Why don't I sit there?
Okay, sure. Who do we have joining on percussion?
Edgar Santiago.
You know these guys already? You just met them up here. Okay, great.
Wow. What do you have there?
Yeah, it's multi-purpose.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna be playing and singing one rumba, okay?
Thank you. you. Jorge, la guitarra.
dancing.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
once again, that was Francisco Fonta and his apprentice Alexis Dominguez. How about one more round of applause for Francisco Fonta and Alexis Dominguez? Jorge Dominguez. I'm sorry. Mr. Fonta may have more than one apprentice, and I was going by the book rather than the most current information. You can speak to them perhaps for another short while in the apprenticeship area, and we're tremendously grateful to both of you for demonstrating here. And the apprenticeship coordinator, too, McWallace, would like to add a word. So you can join that workshop to learn the living tradition behind this style and this Spanish tradition, in fact, in Florida. While we take a few minutes to set up, I want to tell you what's going on. Mary Johns may be around here somewhere, but she's been set up in the Stephen Foster Museum for 3 straight days, and she may have just decided to take a quick break or something of that nature. While we're seeking her, we're going to start our 4 o'clock performer a little early at 3:45. So Eddie Keeney will be joining us on the stage in just one moment. He's a past master in the apprenticeship program in Irish fiddling. I would like to point out the various program guts to you. You can read about our last performer and this performer in the section entitled Folk Arts Village, Flamenco Song and Dance. Now, I misspoke. Mr. Keeney was a master in the apprenticeship program last year. One of his students actually was in the Tallahassee area, and he lives in the Tampa Bay area. And that's one of the rare times when that distance was able to work out. We're going to situate these microphones quickly, and bear with us.
This is pretty good now. If I don't be too close to you. That's fine.
I'm going to put this one between us so you can use it as a vocal mic as well as myself.
All right, fair enough. I won't do both for 2 months.
Well, we may keep this... I'm not sure how long this will go, but we're going to talk about Irish fiddling traditions and Irish music in Florida. Mr. Keeney, tell us where you're from, where you're living now, and where you were from before that.
Well, I'll try to remember where I'm living now.
You can speak into this one.
Is this a better one? Oh, yes, nice and soft. That's a goodie, Where I'm living now, I'm living in Newport Richey, and that's about 200 miles, or almost 180 miles from here, I guess. So anyway, we lived down there this last 8 years. Before that, we lived in New York area, in Long Island, Queens. Made my living in the city of New York. And that's about the answer to your question.
And tell us where in Ireland and what county.
Oh, my goodness. My county in Ireland is Donegal. I come from a place called Ardra. It's a little town in Donegal. And I left over there in 1948. So I'm 50 years in this country. I think I'm a citizen by right? Well, anyhow, yes, I am. And I'm glad to be a citizen of this country. It's a wonderful country. And I liked it from the very first day I ever came. And I always met nice people. And it was a pleasure to be one of you, which I am now.
Well, we're grateful to you and to your lovely wife for staying this long and for being here in the heat. As I recall, you put your fiddle down while you were working in the Bronx, am I right? You also played the accordion, and then you began to play again. Can you tell us about how long you've been playing the fiddle, and if you stopped and started again?
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't know if I can put it really together exactly, but it'll be pretty close to it. I played the fiddle when I was young with my brother in Ireland, and he was quite a bit older than me, almost 20 years. He was like my father. And he loved music, he played his accordion, and he knew a lot of fiddlers in the neighborhoods, and he used to take me around when I started to learn to play a few notes on the fiddle. And I learned quite a few tunes, Irish tunes, and I enjoyed playing them. And I never got that good at the thing, but I was fit to keep up with the other fellas anyhow. So as time went on, the other music started coming in the 1939s and 40s, and people started to move to a different way of thinking and listening to the big bands and the big band eras, and the fiddle sort of became extinct almost, except just for a few that kept their fiddles hanging on the walls and would get together now and again and play a few Irish tunes. But there was most of the people, young people, just like the people in this country, they turned to a different way of thinking and a different way of entertaining themselves. And I got myself a piano accordion because it sort of worked out with that type of music. And I tried to learn it the best way I could by going from... There weren't many piano accordion players around, so I got whatever lessons I got them from piano players that showed me the different keys and chords and stuff that I should learn, and which I forgot long ago now. So anyway, I did that, and even brought my accordion out to this country with me. And I didn't have the fiddle very much whatsoever now during all those years. And I played the accordion with the bands in the city of New York, the Irish-American bands, for many years. So when I was about 55 years old or so, I figured, at about 20 years ago, I figured that's long enough playing. And I just retired at 55 and I went out to Long Island and settled down. I says, no more music. That's it. I'm too old for playing anymore. And I began to listen to the people in the parks playing the Irish music on their flutes, tin whistles, mouth organs and accordions of all nationalities. And I couldn't believe my ears that they were playing the same tunes that I learned in Ireland many years before that. And I walked over and I spoke to some of them. And I said, you know, I used to play some of those tunes. And they said, if you can, why don't you join us? I says, I didn't have a fiddle for many years. They says, why don't you get one? So this was an old man that I knew. He says, I have a couple of them. He says, here's one. He handed it to me, and I still have it. He gave me that fiddle to keep. So anyway, I started playing with him, and I had a great time playing with him out there. There were three young school teachers. They were about 20, 30 years younger than I am. And they just treated me like one of themselves, and they learned some of the tunes that they didn't hear before from me playing with them, and I learned some of them, their whale songs and different type of songs that they like to do. So anyway, that's how I went back playing the fiddle again.
Thank you. Why don't you give us a fiddle tune of your choosing, perhaps in the Donegal style, perhaps not?
I have to start with something sort of easy that's not hard until my finger warms up a little bit. I have trouble with this arthritis situation. So I'll play something like I always used to tell the people I used to like to see James Galway, you know, that played the flute. And he plays a lot of the Irish type of Irish music that I liked. And he always used to come out playing this easy little old tune, The Days of the Kerry Dancing, you know.
Is it all right if I play with that just to start with?
Thank you.
second tune was The Rocky Road to Dublin.
What was the first tune, Mr. Keeney?
The first one was the... That's right. She got it. She was listening the whole time.
My father taught it to me when I was 5 years old.
You get a gold star for that.
And the name was, for
the
record?
The Kerry Dancing. The Days of the Kerry Dancing.
And just to really tax your memory, how did you learn those two tunes?
Oh, that's a long story. Now you're putting me way back. They used to have a concert every year in our town, called an Ardra. They call it the Canon's Concert, and that concert was for parochial purposes. So there were always singers and dancers, and there was a play done all the time. And I remember one girl in our town, whose name was Kathleen Boyle, and she always sang that song at the concert. Every year she sang the same song, the Kerry Dancing. So that's how I learned that song. Listen to her singing the Kerry Dancing. Does that answer the question pretty good?
Truly. Could you tell us a little bit about Donegal and the uniqueness of Donegal styles or Donegal traditions? I've seen a book, and you're listed in it. Now, your apprentice last year, Jane Scott, showed me a little bit about Donegal. And I'm just curious if you could tell us a little bit more about that part of Ireland.
Well, I don't know what I have to say going to be of too much interest, but I'll tell you, fiddle playing in Donegal, it was one place that really kept fiddle playing. There was a certain group in Donegal that kept the fiddle playing up. They never let it down. And I'm sort of ashamed of myself that I sort of, in the very beginning, dropped from it. I never dropped from it. I still was associated with these people, although I went into some of the other type of music as well. But these people never let us down. They were there to play Irish music no matter when. And they stayed with it. Some of them are still alive and well. And a lot of the people that I know aren't around anymore, God bless them. But Irish music was really, really, really well kept up in County Donegal. And they associated themselves with other county players as well, like the Sligo players. And the Donegal, people will ask you, what is the difference between a Donegal fiddler and a Sligo fiddler? There's not that much difference, except the Sligo fiddlers has a more, what you call a more slurry way of playing. More legato, as they say in music, where the Donegal players plays more staccato, you know, chippy, and they attack it harder, you know, in a more attack way. And so does the County Clare people too. They have very much in common with the Clare people and the Sligo people. They, as far as I'm concerned, it's like you listening to somebody from the Caribbean or a Puerto Rican or a Jamaican, and both are speaking Spanish, and because you don't speak that Spanish, it all sounds the same to you. The same thing is with the fiddling, but there is a little difference, and they could tell you the difference. These Spanish speakers, but the Irish fiddle players, it sort of came natural to them, you know, and sometimes they heard the other fella do something and they tried to copy it, which they did copy. People copied our Donegal way of playing and we copied some of their places. Now, there was Coleman and he was from Sligo.
Michael Coleman
was very well known throughout America in the Irish fields as well as in Ireland. Because during those years, his records were brought home to Ireland by the good old Irish people that liked the Irish music. And we heard his records, and we like to play some of his tunes. Do you want me to play one of his tunes?
Yes.
Yeah. Here was a couple of his jigs. All I ever knew on them were Michael Coleman's jigs, so I'm just playing them as Michael Coleman's jigs. One of them, I think, is called the Tar Road to Sligo. I think it is.
I did this one away, that's all right. Okay.
You know, when something's going like this, another sound, it takes me off it, you know, and I sometimes have to, it's in my mind, and I can't get my own mind to just pick up what I'm supposed to be, pick up. I just noticed some very prominent musicians just came in. I got nervous. Do you want to sit down and back me up a little bit there? Be in here with me, yeah.
That'll work just fine.
Yeah.
Thanks, Steve. Eddie, here's some water.
Oh, yeah, yeah, good.
I can put it for you.
Steve, I'm glad to see Steve here. I met him in a few places, Tallahassee and all around different places, and it was always good to see him.
He just wanted me to cover your butt.
Yeah, cover my butt, that's what he wants to do. I need a lot of covering. I hope you brought a lot of it.
Consider a question or two for Eddie. We'll go for about 10 minutes more. So,
we'll
take a few questions from the audience before we're done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is going to be a long night.
Yeah. Bring his up.
Now I'm not alone. Isn't that great? Do you want to play some tunes together, like a couple of hornpipes or something like that?
Just start playing.
Plains of Boyle, we do this. I don't think we ever did it much together, but the Plains of Boyle, okay. He comes in there, don't believe it or not, he doesn't be far behind. Thank you.
This heat is death on musicians and their instruments.
I would like now, maybe we'll do a little bit of an old Carlin's tune, old Carlin's tune. I see some people here that are and entertained us already this evening playing some of these tunes. Maybe we could play one. Could you follow me a little bit on maybe old Carlin's concerto?
I think I've ever played that one. Oh, there's Carlin's draft. You
want to do Carlin's draft? Okay, we change it to O'Carlin's draft.
We can try it after that.
Like to do a reel maybe knife for you. If I can remember this reel, I try to think of it today already. If I keep talking too long, I'll forget it. The last house in Sligo. The last house in Connacht.
Gee.
Tunes that I ever heard, most likely in Ireland, was Miss MacLeod's Reel. And it's played in so many different ways, and no matter what way it's played, it's still Miss MacLeod's Reel. And I enjoy this old tune, and I used to like to listen to Sean McGuire play this tune. Thank you.
About traditional Irish music, I'd like to ask you, you taught an apprentice last year and you've been playing around the Tampa and Tallahassee area. We're always glad to see you in the Tallahassee area. Do you have other students?
No particular ones. I have what's known as like periodic students that comes maybe once a month and calls me up and just comes once in a while to have a run over with me. But no steady flow. It's not no big business.
What's the difference between a jig and a reel?
Oh, well, the jig and the reel is sixth, eighth time for the jig, like in the bar. The other one is like four-fourth or two-fourth time or cut time, you know. You know, and the other one, the jig, is easy to distinguish because it's, you know.
And how is the hornpipe different from
another? Well, a hornpipe is almost a reel. It's played in a different way with an expression more than the reel. The hornpipe's got a sort of a time of its own, like, you know, it's like it's a 2/4 time too, like just the reel, but it's played in a different way, and it's even to look at it written on the music, you know, they all tie all the four notes together, like, and you sort of have an expression on the second one more than the other one, more than the first note. No, every note is not expressed the same way. It's you give it a little more, you know, like you know, you give it a little. Yeah, as the hornpipe. It's not. It doesn't have to be that way, but for some reason or other, a hornpipe. And along with that, it's more. It's a slower. It's mostly slow horn. Slower. Although there are fast hornpipes, some hornpipes that dance. People that play dance hornpipes, they want to dance fast hornpipes, and they learn to dance fast hornpipes, and that's how they dance them. But then we have a lot of people that dances hornpipes, and they like to do the dancing, and they like to take out the time with their feet instead of the rhythm of the music. You know, that kind of way. What am I doing here? My glasses is not in the way or nothing. Yeah, you know. Do you know the hornpipe in the Donegal area? Anyhow, where I'm talking about. The hornpipe is played in a nice, a medium slow, you know. That gives them a chance to maneuver their feet and let you hear them feet. Now, other people that dance hornpipes even years ago, they like to dance the hornpipe fast, and that is almost like a reel. So it's take the same tune and you play it almost fast, and it becomes almost real, you know.
Do almost as like a reel in. So that's the only distinction that I have in the hornpipe and the reel. And the hornpipe is more as a beautiful type of music all by itself. I like it.
What else you got to say?
Yeah. Is there another question anybody wants to ask, which I do not answer very well?
I'd like to ask you about accordion playing. When was the last time you picked up the accordion, and who were your favorite players, Donegal or in the Bronx? Or?
Well, I loved accordion players no matter what country they came from or who they were with. I liked Marion Florin when he played with Lawrence Welk. And I liked the Irish accordion players that came out from Ireland too and played here from County Down, what was his name? Played at his welcome here to this country, football player. But anyway, a lot of all the accordion players are, and the Keens, you know, the Keens. I'm Keeney. I'm not Keeney. Keen. I'm keen on Keen. Keen is a fine accordion player, and his brother plays with the Chieftains, and I like their style of playing. That's Irish button accordion playing, and that's terrific. It's very beautiful. But I like the piano accordion playing. The Irish guys that picked it up and played it, the real Irish style, I enjoyed their style of playing the Irish piano accordion. And that was what I usually mostly tried to do. And I used to try to fake the other music, which I heard other people play the best way I knew how.
I also wanted to ask you about social dancing and Irish dancing and house dancing. And, you know, I've seen you do, I think, the corn rigs, and I think your apprentice last year told me something about what she learned from you about the corn rigs and Irish dancing. Can you tell us a little bit before we finish about dancing in houses and dancing in communities in Ireland?
The dancing in communities was usually a social event. For anything that happened in the neighborhood, somebody came home from America that was away for 10, 20, 30 years, and there was a big night. They called it a big night. All the neighbors came, and we had our dances there, and everything was done in the big kitchen there. We swung around, and you had to have a fiddler and a melodeon player, and we danced the sets and the Highland Fling and the barn dances, and they also did the corn rigs, and that was the one that they were sort of interested in when I spoke about it when we were doing the apprenticeship. So I taught Jane Scott how to do the corn rigs, and then you people made us get out and show everybody how to do the corn rigs. And over in that big hall over there, we had about 200 people doing the corn rigs in less than a half an hour, and they were all doing it well. And there wasn't many steps to it, but believe it or not, they were really doing it well. And they also did the Highland Fling. And some of them had an idea of doing that Highland Fling. The Highland Fling is one of the biggest dances in my time in Ireland. The most, you know, popular dance, the Highland Fling. That was easy because you could take a girl out and dance with her, the Highland Fling. The other dances, the set dances, you would have to get threes and fours and fives and six and so on. You know, the Walls of Limerick and Siege of Venice and all that type of stuff. But the Highland Fling, you just got a girl and you went out and you danced the Highland Fling with her. So that was a good dance. So you got acquainted with her. Yeah. And that's a good dance.
Well, we'd like to ask Mr. Keeney, we'd like to ask you and Steve for one more tune. Of your choosing, of any style, and you tell us a little bit about that tune, why don't you?
We just play these couple of Highland Flings. I think this would be G, and I might change to a different key. You'll have to watch for me. I'm making him do the hard part. This is some of Irish fiddle Highland Flings. This is the last ones. Thank you. Though some say the devil is dead. I enjoy doing that for you.
I think that's us finished. Yeah.